Blog Talk Radio.
I'm back, and that can only mean one thing. It is the Dark Main Event presented by KayfabeCorner.com. We are live on the air everywhere on the vast Blog Talk Radio Network. I am your host, Steve Demain, and I am by myself. Josh is not here. He is going through some things that involve bars and men and orange jumpsuits. So I will be flying solo for tonight. As far as disembodied voice goes, I had to kill him after he kidnapped me and took me off the show last week, so disembodied voice will be gone for the foreseeable future, and I think we can all be happy about that. We do have a lot to get to tonight. I will be airing our exclusive interview with Ricky Reyes that we did last week a little bit later in the show, but to start off, we have to start off on a negative note, unfortunately, because the week in Raw, the week in WWE this week, rather, was interesting, and let me start with Extreme Rules on Sunday night, May 19th, a.k.a. Kanepocalypse Day. There were some great parts of Extreme Rules. I loved The Shield, obviously. I'm glad Hell No finally lost the tag titles after over 8 months. God forbid that was long. And, of course, Dean Ambrose beating Kofi Kingston for the United States Championship. That's all well and good, and I'm happy, and then booking things the right way with them. But there's a couple of things that really, really pissed me the hell off. First and foremost, let's start with the I Quit match with Alberto Del Rio versus Jack Swagger. Now, I don't know if you guys know, but the rules of an I Quit match, you can't lose unless you say I Quit. That's the rules. There's no DQs, there's no countouts, there's no submissions, there's no pins. You say I Quit, or the match keeps going. So WWE decides we're going to have them throw in the towel and get disqualified, and then we're going to go to fucking instant replay to see if he got disqualified. Really? Really? How are you going to use instant replay in a match that instant replay has no value or premise for whatsoever? How do you replay someone saying, I quit? Nobody said I quit. Why are you stopping the match? JBL even said on the air that it sets a horrible, horrible fucking precedent. And I agree, because now you're going to have the IWC, and Lord knows that despite me being part of this and all of us being part of it, every time there's a controversial ending to a match, why didn't they use replay? Why didn't they use replay? Why didn't they use replay? This is why you don't do it. I hope this is a one-off thing and WWE never does it again, because that is just absolutely fucking stupid. And it got worse. You have a last man standing match between John Cena and Ryback for the WWE Championship. And it ends after Ryback kills Cena, spears him through the set, and it's a no contest. But Ryback was standing and the referee didn't count because Cena couldn't continue. I might be crazy here, but are they taking the rules of the match and saying the rules don't matter because we're just going to book it however it is and you fans can suck it because you're going to like it no matter what we do? I feel like they really ripped me off personally as a fan with that. It's a last man standing match. One man was standing. It was Ryback. Why is John Cena still holding on to the WWE Championship? Why do they have to have an ambulance match or payback in the first place? And then you get to Raw on Monday night. And I'm just going to skip over mostly everything about Raw because it was okay. There were some great parts. There were some meh parts. There were some filler parts. Triple H versus Curtis Axel. Curtis Axel, if you didn't see Raw, was the new Paul Heyman client. It's Michael McGillicuddy repackaged. He's got a great name. His theme music is awesome. It's a remix of Mr. Perfect's old theme. I love it. I'm glad he's getting a chance. The guy is uber talented. He should have gotten this a long time ago, and with Heyman by his side, he can go to the top, but you got Curtis Axel versus Triple H on Raw as your main event. And it's an awesome idea. Triple H hasn't been on Raw in 3 years. Ratings are going to go through the roof. And the match wasn't wasn't bad. It was okay. And then Triple H passes out and can't continue. Now, someone brought up a good point, and I've had a couple of days to think about this. It is kind of a replay of the Shawn Michaels angle from 13 years ago when he passed out versus Owen Hart and they faked the concussion. And the storyline rumor is that Triple H will be back in a few weeks and Vince and Stephanie are going to try to convince him not to wrestle because he had a concussion. And with Dolph Ziggler having a concussion and the real awareness that's going on with concussions in not only wrestling but in pro sports these days in general, I think that's a great idea. But here's the thing. This is Curtis Axel's first match. And yes, I know. Before everyone jumps down my throat, I know they're going to say, oh, well, Curtis Axel can say he took out Triple H in his first match, and what a push that is, and that's a great idea. Yeah, they probably will do that. I'm sure Paul Heyman will come out and be like, my client Curtis Axel took out Triple H in his first match, and there's no stopping him, and he's going to team with Brock Lesnar, and that's great. But when a guy debuts, and especially a repackaged guy, this is not like, you know, Corey Graves or someone brand new from NXT who nobody's really ever heard of coming up and getting this kind of push. This is Michael McGillicuddy. Everybody knows him as that, with the stupid name, with the tag team with Otunga, with all that. If you got a repackaged guy coming up and you're sending him in there to have Triple H not finish a match in his first match, that is fucking stupid. At the end of the day, it's fucking stupid. Half the people are going to be like, well, that's great, you know, because Axel took him out. Half the people like me are going to be like, you just, Triple H buried him because he didn't want to lose to the guy. And it's blatantly obvious that Triple H would never, ever, 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 ever book himself to lose to freaking Michael McGillicuddy or Curtis Axel or Joe Hennig or whatever you want to call him. It's not happening. This was Triple H having his ego being too goddamn big to just get pinned clean by Axel. WWE in the past couple of days has just, I don't know. The booking with The Shield and Ryback has been great, and I think they're doing a couple of things right. But the majority of the things they're doing wrong overshadow the amazing, amazing, amazing job they're doing with The Shield and Ryback, and that's about it. You had Fandango freaking dancing with Summer during a tag team match with Wade Barrett on Raw, and the Strat match from Extreme Rules. Mark Henry didn't even get a chance. Sheamus just hit all four corners the first time he tried it, and the match was over. And now Mark Henry's going to be off TV for a while. And remember, they're going to bring him back as a babyface. I don't know if any of you remember how bad babyface Mark Henry was, but it was fucking stupid. This whole thing is fucking stupid, and I know I'm saying that so much, but it's terrible. Heel Mark Henry has been one of the best things on TV from a full-time superstar. If Mark Henry is going to keep leaving the company, as clearly shown, I'm so frustrated that I can't talk, as clearly shown by what they're doing, they're taking him off TV, Lesnar's off TV, Punk's off TV, Ziggler is hurt, where are all the top heels? Right now the top heel is who? Langston? Whatever. We're going to move on now to something happier and something a lot more fun. And I get to have someone on the phone with me. Hi, Bethany. How you doing?
Hi, Steve. I'm doing all right. How's it going solo?
So far, so good. I got to get all that out in the first 10 minutes of the show, and now we can move on and have some, you know, good times and talk about good stuff, and I'm sure you have some comments about pretty boots and hair and all that.
You know, always.
Before we get to that, though, we did get a sponsor for your segment, actually, and they asked me to play their message before we got into your match review for the week. So,
I have a sponsor?
You have a sponsor. Yes, I know. I was surprised, too. But we're just going to play this real quick. It's only a few seconds. No big deal. So just hang tight, okay?
All right.
All right. And now, let me get my voice on. Mm-mm. And now, a word from our sponsors.
In a world where four people this beautiful on the same screen happen, you might just go blind. A movie so attractive, your husband might just go gay. A film so alluring, it might just drive you insane. George Clooney, Brad Pitt, Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, in the Clooney Defleck production comes Besties.
not yet rated.
So
wow.
That was a message from your new sponsor, so you should be thrilled about that.
I'm super thrilled. I can't wait to see the movie. It sounds like it's going to be pretty fap-worthy.
Sounds like your husband might go gay, too, so I watch out for that.
He already is, but it's all right. I'm just a beard.
Oh, okay. I probably didn't need to know that. But anyways, awkward. So the match that Josh and I had picked for this week was actually coming from his hometown of Omaha, Nebraska. And it is Good Friends, Better Enemies, a.k.a. Shawn Michaels versus Diesel from In Your House. And, boy, a lot of stuff happens in this match, doesn't it, Bethany?
It totally does. I actually wrote 2 full pages worth of notes because that's how much stuff.
Wow.
Yeah. I'll watch a match and I'll, you know, take a piece of paper and Jeremy will sit there and watch me to see what it is I'm actually jotting down because I don't write anything down until, like, a random thought pops in my head as I'm watching. So I got 2 full pages. It was actually, there's a lot of stuff that happened. It was kind of neat. So,
yeah, go ahead.
The first thing was, I think it was WWF In the House or something like that was in house or whatever.
In Your House. Yeah.
Yeah, In Your House. Okay, so my first impression was that it looked like they were coming out from the set of America's Funniest Home Videos. I was just waiting for Bob Saget to come out at any minute and take away the show, and it didn't happen. I was slightly disappointed. I know. So, of course, got to get to the clothing. I liked Diesel's vest. I thought it was really cool. It was even cooler in Vince McMahon's face. That was a cute little touch there. And Shawn Michaels' vest and his earrings, not as cool. I didn't dig his outfit that much, except for his pants. I noticed, chaps, whatever they were. So his chaps have a teal heart shape around the crotch. It was genius. It's just an easy way to draw your eyes to that part, so that was neat.
They don't call him the Heartbreak Kid for nothing.
What's that?
They don't call him the Heartbreak Kid for nothing.
The Heartbreak Kid, yeah, exactly. So it started off really great, you know, really quickly. I thought it was really funny. And then totally random weapon provided by the Spanish announcer was El Buto. I thought that was kind of funny. So that's what I named him, was El Buto. And I thought that was really interesting. And I don't know what the beef was between Diesel and McMahon. I know that was his name is Kevin Nash. That was his last match there before he jumped over to WCW. Do you know if that had anything to do with it? The whole vest?
I believe the feud was storyline, if I remember correctly, but it's been a while since I revisited that entire thing.
I'm kind of curious now. But so shit got real when the ref's belt came off. Like, you know, first the tape came off and he choked the ref, and I was like waiting to see if there was a razor blade cut going to show some blood at some, you know, something. But then he steals the ref's belt, and things got a little like BDSM there for a minute, and it was kind of exciting. It was crazy. It made me cringe when he threw Shawn Michaels over the top of the ring, and he's just hanging there by his belt. That made me a little uncomfortable.
Just
a tiny bit. And just the random thought, you know, that Jeremy and I both actually had when we were watching, you know, his Shawn Michaels, you know, beautiful, beautiful full head of hair. And we were just both thinking, R.I.P. Shawn's hairline. Why, God, why? And we thought it was kind of funny. His
even
hair
the Hulk Hogan
beautiful.
Hair club.
Yeah, exactly. It's beautiful hair. I'll get into this other part for a minute because I'll actually get kind of serious and drop some, you know, unexpected knowledge on you as far as wrestling goes, things that I was pondering. But I'll get back to the match. Then there was the monitor to the balls, and this was back in the day before they actually removed TVs, before throwing somebody onto a table. So I thought that was kind of dangerous, you know, and I'm not sure how he didn't cringe or limp after that. You know, and it was kind of nice to see some big moves, like flying moves from Shawn near the end, but it was really brief. And then my favorite part was Big Daddy Cool takes your El Buto, Shawn, and raises you a fucking leg. Like, that was hysterical. I was like, is that what? I was like, he's just taking a random dude from the audience. What's he doing? You know, what did he ever do? And then he pulls off his leg. I was like, what just happened? So I thought it was kind of funny. It was like a match made for me. Like, there were two boots in the match. So that was kind of neat. And then the match ended just, you know, a kick to the chin, and then that was it. It was a good match. I think that both of them are really good at selling their moves. But I would have liked to have seen a little bit more flying around the ring type of stuff that Shawn Michaels, you know, that I've seen a few other matches that he used to do all over the place. And I didn't see that much in this one. But so my whole, like, serious thinking, though, it was disappointing in a way because it kind of reminds me of the big John Cena matches of today where a whole lot of it is just, you know, the face getting his ass kicked by the heel, perseveres until the big comeback at the end. And the two matches that I thought of, and in fact, I got them both confused in my head. I made them into one match, but it was the Last Man Standing match with Batista and the I Quit match with, I think it was Randy Orton. Both those kind of stood out in me because it was just a lot of John Cena getting his ass kicked all over the ring and then finally gets up and, you know, does his big thing, and he's the winner at the end. And it was just kind of, like, frustrating. I expected to see a little bit more, and it seems like they just keep doing the same things with their good guy characters over and over, and I didn't realize that it had been this way for years.
Wow. Yeah, that's a really good point. Since you mentioned the John Cena matches, I guess another more recent one would be, I believe it was in an I Quit match with The Miz he had a couple of years ago. And it was just the same thing. Him and Alex Riley were just beating the shit out of him. And yeah, that's a good point. Cena just keeps getting back up. And Michaels kind of did the same thing. But I think the way they did that was because Nash was leaving and they needed to make HBK look, you know, like Superman so he could be a believable champion when Nash wasn't around to get his rematch.
Right, right. Yeah, that totally makes sense. And it was, it makes sense. Well, then what's Cena's excuse? He's not chasing people out. I don't know. I guess I've just seen too much John Cena that it gets annoying because, you know, not being somebody that watched wrestling for years and years before, seeing Shawn Michaels do this after seeing John Cena do it so many times, I was like, yawn, you know, gee, who's going to win this one and when's his big move going to be? And honestly, I thought that it was going to be the fire extinguisher to the face. I thought that was going to be what turned the whole match around. So I was actually a little bit surprised that he was still getting his ass kicked after that. But yeah, I mean, it was a pretty good match. All in all, I gave it 3.5 out of 5 hair flips. But, you know, the prosthetic leg prop totally gave 5 hair flips. That was the best part.
Do you know who that guy was who got his leg pulled off? Because he is actually somebody.
Is he somebody? No, I have no idea.
He is. He's WWE Hall of Famer Mad Dog Vachon. He used to wrestle back in the day. And nobody knew he had a fake leg at the time. So when Nash pulled him out of the crowd and everyone's like, what is he doing with Mad Dog? That was basically Mad Dog's way of telling everybody, hey, I lost half my leg. I have a fake leg now.
That was him coming out of the legless closet?
In a way, yeah, because nobody knew.
That's kind of cool. I didn't know that. I kind of want to go back and rewatch the match now.
Yeah, Vince McMahon makes a comment about it being Mad Dog. I don't know if you heard it or not. Them getting their headsets torn off and having to use, like, the standing microphones, and Lawler's just, you know, screaming at Vince the whole time, and you see him just going crazy.
Yeah. So, I liked that, too, especially when it was Lawler's headset that was stuck to the chair, and so it wasn't just the chair going on Nash's back. Like, it was, like, wires and stuff, too, that must have been slapping him, and that couldn't feel good. But I thought that it was funny that they were forced to stand for the rest of the match, and I'm thinking that Lawler was freaking out so much because he just wanted to sit down. He's like, can we just end this fucking thing so I can sit down again? Like, I honestly think that's why he was freaking out so much about it. And honestly, I didn't know that Vince McMahon did a lot of commentating. I didn't realize.
Yeah, Vince McMahon was a commentator long before it was even revealed that he was the owner of the company. That was his way of kind of hiding the fact that he was running everything.
Gotcha. See, you learn something new every day. It was fascinating. I think that it was a really great match for me to watch because it just opened my eyes up to just a lot of the ways that they do storylines and you get to see different facets of people and stuff. Like the matches that I have seen Shawn Michaels in before a lot was him basically doing a lot of showy moves and just totally owning his opponent for the most part. You know, that are being really equally matched, and so it could go either way. So seeing this, where he was just laid out on the mat pretty much the entire time, and various other places, you know, it was kind of interesting to see. I didn't realize that there were matches where he did that. But they both sold their moves really good, you know, really well. So I dug it. It was an interesting match.
Yeah, they really did, and that is one of those weird moments that will just live forever in the history of WWE, and it's great overall match. The storyline was great. Everything was great. So I'm glad you got to see it, and I'm glad you enjoyed all the boots that were in the match.
Yeah, all the boots. You guys are always thinking of me.
We are. Clowns and boots. We'll get you something else next week.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks a lot, Bethany.
All right. I'll talk to you later.
Later. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was our favorite segment, everyone's favorite segment, my favorite segment, your favorite segment, Girl Meets Wrestling. And now we're going to get to the meat and potatoes of this show. Josh and I did record an exclusive interview last week with independent wrestler Ricky Reyes. And if you have no idea who Ricky Reyes is, where the hell have you been? Ricky has been everywhere and anywhere you could think of, including in WWE in a handicap match against Ryback. He's been in ROH. He's been in NWA. He's done it all. He's a YouTube star. And you guys are going to thoroughly enjoy this interview. So without any further ado, here we go, Ricky Reyes on the Dark Main Event.
All right, everybody, it's that time again here on the Dark Main Event. This is Josh. I'm here with Steve. Say what's up, Steve.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
That's right. And we are here with the man who has wrestled in just about every country you can think of, Mr. Ricky Reyes. Ricky, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being on the show.
All right, and we are just going to get right into this. If you guys don't know Ricky, we posted a little preview of some of his work on our Facebook page, facebook.com/kayfabecorner, and Ricky, let's not waste any more time. We're going to get right into this. So I guess the first question we have for you is, can you give us a little background about yourself?
I grew up a huge wrestling fan, like most of us did. I was born and raised in Southern California, trained all through California, in Southern California area, Jesse Hernandez's School of Hard Knocks wrestling, and eventually moved into the New Japan Dojo in Santa Monica for like 4 years and trained there and stuff. And always wanted to be a pro wrestler, and, you know, just grew up knowing that's what I was going to do for a living, and that's what I'm doing. So I traveled all over Mexico, Puerto Rico, Japan, Europe, Canada, and all over the U.S., so that's about it.
Awesome, awesome. You mentioned going all over to those different countries. What can you tell us about those experiences from all those different places?
Needless to say, every country has its own unique style and culture and stuff like that. Well, the one thing that I always prided myself on is you hear a lot of guys, all the time. I've been to Mexico and I've been to, Japan and it's true because they may go and do their 2-week tour or, however long that they're there for, and then they leave, But for me, it was never about just getting in there and doing my time and leaving. Like, anytime I go anywhere, I try to stay for as long as I possibly can, Like, when I went over for CMLL, I was only supposed to be there a few weeks. That turned into like 4 months, and it was because, I'm easy to work with, business wise. And, I just want to stay busy and learn, So it took me a while to catch on to the Lucha Libre style. So I felt that, I wanted to stay and train and continue training with Nico Casas and Shocker and, all the Vampiro and all the guys that were like there teaching me and stuff. So, I ended up staying as long as I could. And same thing in Japan, trained in the New Japan Dojo for a year before, I got my first got booked to go over in October of 2002. So I trained the whole year, and I did like two different tryouts for New Japan office. Liger was first one, and then Chono came down and with the rest of the office people and with Nagata and stuff, and just kind of like to evaluate how the dojo was being ran in its first year and, what we looked like and what we worked like. And, eventually I earned, after doing like three tryout matches in one day, I ended up, you know, getting picked to go over to, for the Tokyo Dome and starting work with New Japan. So, you know, same thing with when I went to Puerto Rico. You know, Steve Corino is a good friend of mine. He was the one that he gave me a call, and he said, you know, hey, would you interested in coming down here? You know, there's a position where, you know, you might fit in, but it's only like a 4 to 6 week run, you know? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. You know, and I ended up staying there almost a year. I was there for 11 months, you know, and it was the exact same thing. Like, you know, I went in and, my first day there, Steve pulled me aside and, I just saw Carlos. I was walking into the building and I seen Carlos like from a distance. He was in the office of the building that we were in, and I kind of waved at him, and he, you know, gave me his $1 million smile and waved back, and I felt pretty cool about that. I was like, man, you know, I'm here working for Carlos Colon. This is awesome, you know. It was in the big building and by Amon, the 10,000-seat arena, and so it was my first show there, so I was all jazzed up. It was on cloud nine, you know. My apartment was on the beach, you know, in San Juan, so couldn't have had a better location. You know, I'm working in Puerto Rico. And then Carino pulls me aside, and he's like, man, he's like, I got some bad news. And I was like, what? You know, like, what's the matter? And he's like, yeah, Carlos thought you were a lot bigger than you are, so he's kind of pissed. And I was like, what? He's like, well, he knew you were a junior heavyweight, but he doesn't like small guys. And I'm like, oh, you know, what the fuck? He's small himself. Like, we're almost the same height, you know? Like, he's like, yeah, but he doesn't think small guys draw, you know? Like he doesn't think you're going to be, you know, anything. He goes, so just let you know, like, it's up to you to win him over. So I was like, all right, you know, whatever. Story of my life. So I went in there and did my thing. And after a few weeks, he was like, man, you know, he would come up to me after my matches and just, you know, I mean, it was just unbelievable to be able to sit there and literally just, like, shoot the shit with him and talk to him and stuff. But he was, like, coming up to me, complimenting me, you know, to the point where Carino got upset. I remember one night, Carino did a cage match with Ray Gonzalez, and he got so bloody. I mean, he must have lost, I don't know how much blood, but he was, like, covered in blood. And it was a heavyweight title match, and Steve won, you know, and he comes to the back, and the crowd's going crazy, you know. They're booing and throwing stuff at him, trying to stab him and all this craziness, and he comes to the back, and Carlos is, like, packing his stuff up, getting ready to exit out before the crowd starts leaving. And he runs up to Carlos, I mean, full of blood. And he's like, gee, he always searched for Carlos's, you know, approval, you know. And he's like, oh, what'd you think of my match? What'd you think of the match? And Carlos just looks at him, and he's like, could have been longer. And, like, just walked right past him. And, like, you just see Carino, like, almost, like, all the wind just deflate out of him. He was like, oh, you know, like, and I felt bad, you know. And then it wouldn't have been no less than, like, 2 weeks later, you know. I was did a house show, and I beat the crap out of this one kid because he was just, like, you know, thought he was a, you know, only wanted to work hard when the cameras were on for TV, you know, didn't think he needed to work hard on a house show, and that's not how I roll. So I beat the hell out of him for like 25 minutes and came to the and went to the back, and it was intermission, and Carlos comes down, and he's like, man, that was a really good match, you know. You beat the hell out of that kid, but, you know, sometimes that's what they need, you know. They need to be pushed and realize, you know, this is how we do it, you know. And I'm like, wow, yeah. And I'll never forget, he turned around and walked back up the stairs, and Carino runs up to me, he goes, you piece of shit, like that. And I was like, what? And he's like, Carlos never compliments me on my match. He goes, I lost 10 pints of blood the other day. And he said, you know, he criticized the length of the match. And, you know, you go out there and beat the hell out of Carlitos, and he loves you. He's like, what the hell? You know, and he was hot, and I was just laughing. And so, you know, that became the ongoing joke for I don't know how many weeks. You know, we would just be like, well, Carlos likes me and doesn't like you, you know. So, you know, but I enjoyed my time there. You know, during the week, I would go to Glamour Boy Shane's wrestling school, and he had a school in Caguas and a baseball stadium, and I would go there, you know. I think it was a Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights, I would go there and train, you know, with him, you know, listening to him and, you know, work out with the guys. And, you know, he always wanted me to teach the guys, but I, you know, that wasn't what I wanted. I kept telling him that, you know, no, I want to learn from you. And, you know, he was very, you know, he thought the world of me as well, just because I worked so hard every night, you know. And
yeah.
So, I mean, everywhere you go, you know, it's needless to say that, you know, the worlds are completely different, but I go and I take pride in going and learning the culture and living there. You know, I want to live there and I want to, you know, like if I go to Japan again, you know, I've been there 10 times. So, I mean, I kind of know my way around at least Tokyo and you know, and Osaka and, you know, the major cities at least. And, you know, I'm very familiar with Mexico City and stuff, you know, living there and, you know, having a few days off every week was nice because I could just kind of walk around and explore. And same thing with Puerto Rico. I mean, it's just an island. So, I mean, you know, I got used to that real quick in 11 months. So.
Yeah, for sure. And you talked about some of your some of the matches that stuck out to you. What I wanted to ask you about personally, as a huge fan of all of these, in the 2004 ROH Tag Team Title match when you teamed with Rocky Romero to beat CM Punk and Colt Cabana. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, that that actually was a odd night. Cabana had gotten this eye surgery. I guess maybe the week before or something, I'm not sure. But he comes out, and it was right when Rick James had passed away.
Okay.
And he had these glasses on, kind of like a basketball player would have, you know, like the clear, like
the
goggles.
The Horace Grant goggles?
Yes, exactly. Well, not as bulky and white as Horace's, but kind of like Kareem used to wear, you know, almost.
Okay.
Like clear. Yeah. So,
right.
Like, he came out to Rick James, you know, and he's dancing and crowd's going crazy as they do for him. And I looked at Rocky and I was like, the fuck is he wearing? Glasses? You know, like, but they're clear, you know, and I didn't get it. Well, he forgot to tell us that he, not to kick him in the face, right, or anything, because he had just gotten surgery. So we didn't know, you know, not that we were, like, aiming for his eyeballs or anything like that, but in the match, we start getting going, and a couple of moments, it just got like, you know, with Punk, he's always been this way. Like, you know, he's very like, all right, let's push ourselves and see what we got, you know. And I think that's why him and I, like, to this day, are still good, really good friends, because we kind of see everything as like a challenge, like, in wrestling, you know. Like, you know, we always try to outwork each other, I guess, and out wrestle each other. So, you know, a lot of the matches we have had, or I had with Punk at least, were never, I guess, quote-unquote choreographed much. You know, we would just kind of go, you know, and whoever ended up on top was, you know, going to end up being the winner. So, for the most part, like for the wrestling portion of it at least, you know. And then, so anyways, we get into it, and we start throwing pretty heavy, hard shots with each other, and everyone's wrestling really hard. Well, there's two points of the match. One where I think I go to make a break, and Cabana's pinning Rocky, and I go to kick him. Well, he's paranoid now that I know, you know, he was paranoid for his eyes. So he leans his head down, like, to give me his forehead, and I was kind of aiming for, like, his shoulder. Well, he kind of leans in, and I just remember hitting him, like, flush, like, in his glasses, and his glasses go flying, and he's mad, and he's throwing little girl punches at my ankles, you know, and I'm like, the hell is he doing, you know? So we go into the deal, and then I turn around, and, you know, now we go into another part of the match, and it's clear as day on the tape where, you know, if you have that match, Rocky goes to kick him, and he, like, toes him in the eye. So now Cabana is like, with both eyes closed, and he looks like he's swimming on the canvas, like swinging with his eyes closed, like fists, you know, trying to hit us. Like, he's like legit mad. And we're like, you know, like, he looks like a baby, you know, and I'm like, what the hell is he doing? You know, like, I was so confused. That match was so ridiculous. Like, everybody was a little bit off for some reason, not even sure why. I remember Punk apologizing, like, all night, like, oh, I wanted to be there for you guys, blah, 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 you know. Because we had taken the belts off him that night, and
sure.
And it was just funny, because then Cabana is like, he's like crying like a little girl in the back, they're kicking me in the face, you know, and I'm like, you know, I like Cabana, you know, he's funny, you know what I mean, but he's kind of a little bitch sometimes, so, you know, I just kind of like blew him off, like, whatever, you know, this guy could cry about that shit. So, you know, I was in my usual Ricky Reyes mode, and then he comes up, you know, Punk comes up to us and was like, yeah, he's all mad because, you know, you guys kicked him in the eyes. I'm like, well, what was his problem? Why is he wearing glasses? And he's like, he didn't tell you they had, you know, eye surgery, you know, to clear up his eye. I was like, no. He's like, oh, he goes over and yells at him. He's like, yeah, you fucking dumb, man, you idiot. It's your fault, you know. And he's like, yeah, dude. And he's like, no, you didn't. They don't, you know. So then Cabana comes over and he's like, oh, I'm sorry, you know, let's all love each other. And I'm like, I'm cool with it. I said, you know, we would have been way more careful, obviously, but, you know, you didn't say anything. So, I mean, that was just funny.
Probably should have mentioned the eye surgery before he got in the ring.
Well, that's why we were so confused when he had glasses, you know, and I thought, okay, I don't know, is it part of his little, you know, Rick James thing? Like, I don't know. And then he's like standing on the apron with him, and I'm circling with Punk, and I'm looking over, and I was like, oh, Kurt Rambis, you really gonna wear those? Like, what's going on here? You know? But whatever.
Not the Rambis reference. That's great.
Yeah.
His mantra is not in the face, also, but that's a completely different story for another time. You also wrestled in the NWA. What did it mean to you to work in an organization with such a legacy, with all the different guys that wrestled for them, like Flair, Rhodes, and those guys?
You know, I grew up actually watching more NWA than I did WWF. I was always sold on Jim Ross, listening to Jim Ross say, where we wrestle, we don't pose, you know, we're not clowns, and, you know, kind of making it like WWF was, you know, more character-based.
Cartoony,
which,
right.
Yeah, exactly. So, it's true, you know, especially the late 80s going into the early 90s, like, I enjoyed, you know, the Horsemans, and, you know, and the Barry Windhams, and, you know, all these guys, and I'll never forget, like, when the Brainbusters came over, you know, I was like, yo, these, you know, telling my friends, like, these guys are going to beat Demolition for the belts, and they're like, no, they won't, they're fat, look at them, they suck, you know, and I'm like, no, you don't understand, you know, they're from the NWA, these guys are real wrestlers, you know, and so, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I've always been a huge fan of the NWA, and I wish that they would basically just get their shit together, because there's so much potential there, you know what I mean, and so much, like, companies work hard to build good reputations, you know what I mean, like, an independent company, it works hard for years, you know, to put out a solid product and to get fans to recognize their company with a certain type of wrestling, you know, whether it be very athletic or, you know, whatever it is, you know, like every company has a certain mystique to them, you know, and the NWA has the ultimate, you know, I mean, let's face it, you know, if you're a wrestling fan and you're watching Monday Night Raw, you know, you're not watching wrestling anymore. You know, you're watching, you know, an entertainment.
Entertainment.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, they got the ultimate, you know, it should be right up there with Ring of Honor wrestling. But, you know, they just, I believe right now that this state that the NWA is in, it's more about, you know, they try to give guys championships and hope that the championship makes the guys instead of, it should be the other way around, you know, like the guys should elevate the championships. It's just that it seems as if this current NWA wants to pick and choose where they invest their money in, you know, and I think that, you know, if they want their belts to mean anything, they should put them on, you know, more solid and established, you know, good wrestlers, you know, and invest some money in it, because, I mean, I've made a bid, I don't know how many times, and, you know, spoken to the president a couple times about, you know, having a run with either the national or the world's junior heavyweight championship, and I said, you know, if a guy like myself ends up winning the NWA World Junior title, you know, it's literally going to mean something, you know. And I mean, not to blow smoke up my own ass, but I mean, like, let's face it. Like, when was the last time anyone ever cared about that belt? You know what I mean? And I just thought that if you put it on the right guys, I could start, you know, doing what the NWA is supposed to be doing, which is taking that belt and making guys in other areas, you know. And I just I enjoy working for the ones that I do work for, which is like NWA on Fire, you know, NWA Upstate in New York and stuff, you know, and I enjoy it very much. And those guys, they work very hard. You know, the guys like NWA on Fire, they got TV, you know, and they, you know, for a guy like me, I go in and give 100% every night. So to see the company and the bookers and the, you know, and everybody giving just as much, like, that's like very, you know, it's a good feeling, you know, to know that these guys take it serious. You know, sometimes you get paid really well and you go to some place and you realize that the guys running the place should be the guys buying tickets and sitting in the front row, you know, because they just do it for all the wrong reasons. But, you know, yeah, I mean, I enjoy what the NWA on Fire does, and I think that they should be looked at as, like, the flagship brand for that company. But, you know, I don't know. They don't have any world or national titles there, you know, and they have a great product, and they produce TV really well, and everyone there is awesome to work for, so.
Without a doubt. You mentioned a little bit ago, actually, WWE television. You actually had the opportunity about a year ago to wrestle in a handicap match against Ryback on SmackDown. How big was it for you to make it on WWE TV?
I've been doing WWE stuff since, like, 2004. So, I mean, okay. I've been on the TV a bunch of times, like a handful of times before. And so I kind of do their stuff all the time. I think it just got more buzz because it was, like, Ryback thing, and it just, like, seems the past year and a half that, you know, good guys are at least getting looked at a little bit more, and it seems like they're trying to sign, like, the better talent that's out there now. So
right.
I think that's kind of why it got a little bit more recognition before, because I had did vignettes where I was, like, with all the cruiserweights when they had cruiserweights, and I did extra stuff where I was, you know, in the background and all that crap. And you know, I mean, I've been doing stuff for them for forever, like, for the longest. Like, I did Carlito's dark match in, like, the Staples Center, like, years ago, you know, when he was just getting called up and stuff like that. So, I mean, I do stuff for them quite often. So, it was fun, though. It's always fun. I mean, you know, you say what you say about the WWE or whatever, but you know, the guys put their time in on, like, house shows and stuff. You know, that's where they're going out giving you the wrestling matches that you really want to see, you know, and you know, they're doing that, geez, 5-6 days a week in a row, you know what I mean? Doing 15, 20, 30 minutes sometimes, you know, like, so there, you know, there's wrestling still, you know, you may not see it on Monday night, but, you know, those guys are, you know, they're banged up and doing their job and road, you know, on the road. So it's everyone that works there is just so nice, you know what I mean? Like, you go back there and as an extra, you know, talent, you know, you just feel like you're always in the way, you know what I mean? Like, anyone that's ever done it will understand exactly what I'm saying. Like, you just feel like, A, everyone's looking at you wondering, who the hell is this idiot, you know? And then B, it just, you just cannot find a corner quick enough to hide in, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know, you're paid to be there, you're asked to be there, you know, you want to be there and this and that, but you just still feel like, you know, man, you know, the best thing for me is, like, guys like Punk and Brian and Claudio and all those guys, they're still the same guys, you know, to me. So, you know, it's always fun, like, when I get done talking to Punk for, like, an hour or something at catering and walk away, I just feel like, man, not only is, you know, is he still, you know, the dirtball CM Punk that I always knew, but he's, you know, nothing's going to change him, you know what I mean? And it's just nice to know that at least that guy's on top, you know what I mean? So,
right.
You know, it's always a pleasure to work there, you know, and, you know, for them, I've been told numerous times, it's like timing issue, you know, there's, you know, I went and did the NXT tryout in February for them in Florida, and everything went well, and basically was told, you know, there is an idea that we may have for you, you know, we just need this network to get launched, and we would be able to put you in that role, so, you know, hang tight, you know, and you're always like, you know, you sure you don't want to sign me now, you know?
Yeah,
but,
come on, the network, that's been in work forever, don't give me
that.
That's... Yeah. You know, those, but it's funny because even the higher-ups, like, up there, they don't really know, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, I've talked to, you know, some important people, you know, especially being there that weekend, like, everybody was there. The whole office was there. Jim Ross was there, you know, and, they all said the same thing, like, well, we're hoping it gets, you know, we're hoping we hear something. And I'm thinking, well, you know what, if the new talent relations guy doesn't know anything, you know, and he's hoping, you know what I mean, like,
right,
yeah,
I don't know.
It's probably about time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, moving on, you're currently the head trainer at a wrestling school in Deer Park, which is pretty near me, actually. I'm in New York City. You're in Deer Park, Long Island. Victory Pro Wrestling. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, that was a place when I was with ROH. We came up to Long Island and did a show years ago, and the promoter and the booker were at the show, the ROH show. They asked me to come in and do the seminar the next morning because I think we were at a Friday night show in Long Island. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. So I went up Saturday morning and did a seminar for their school. They had about 15 people. This was years ago. And it went really well. And the promoter was just kind of in awe of how I, you know, was teaching guys, and I'm very technical and I pay close attention to detail. And so I was nitpicking at the smallest things, and, you know, everyone seemed to really grasp what I was teaching and really enjoyed it, you know. And I remember he pulled me aside and said, I kind of wrote everything down, the drills and stuff. I really liked them. And, you know, is it cool, we just run these? And I was like, yeah, cool, you know. And then a few years later, I was going back and forth to Japan for 01 for a little bit. And I remember I was leaving for 2 weeks, and he had a show the week of I was leaving, and then the day after I had gotten back in a 2 week span. And I was like, yeah, that actually works out well, you know, I'd totally come. So I'm leaving for Japan in between those. So he was like, oh, that'd be awesome, you know, you want to come back and do another seminar, you know, on the second date. And I said, yeah. So I did that, and then he had a ring rental up in some show I was doing in Brooklyn, and he asked me, you know, if I'd like to come down and teach the school. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. And there was so much potential there. I mean, like, I'm sure there is at a lot of schools, but, you know, with no guidance, you know, they didn't have any good guidance, you know what I mean? Like, there's guys
right.
that look great but didn't have the know-how, and then you had the guys that had the know-how but they look like crap and didn't have that part, you know, of that hunger inside to get pushed to the point to where they're like, hey, I want to at least get in decent shape and make a run at this, you know. So it was it's been good. I mean, I've been there for a couple of years now. We sell out every show now. Our biggest problem is ordering more chairs. Like, you know, like, we literally put out 250 you know, to 300 chairs, and there's still like another 75 people at the door. You know, we're telling everybody, look, if you're going to come in, you know, either go back and get your own chair, or you're going to be standing against the walls, you know. And it's a good problem to have, you know, especially in that area. Not a lot of people draw well, you know, in that area. But we get,
yeah.
I mean, on a bad day, we'll get just under 300, you know what I mean? And
wow.
That's like, yeah, and which is great. And that's not even, see, that's an awesome thing, but that's not like, because of me or anything. It's, you know, everybody as a whole, the promoter goes out and does his job, so we don't have to worry about that. We just worry about the wrestling. But the best part about it is the second your music is cued, there's an instant reaction from the fans, which tells us that they're fans of the product. You know what I mean? Like, they follow who you are. They know what's going on. You know, the second you walk out there, you just look around, everybody knows your name. Everyone's got signs and T-shirts of, you know, this guy sucks, or this guy's awesome, or whatever, you know. And
right.
And it's an amazing feeling. Like, you know, it's funny because they're not hyped up on the internet, you know. But, you know, there's times I'm at the gym and people walk up to me, like in New York, because I stay there for the weekend, because I do the show, and then I stay at my buddy's house, and then we go and lift, and then we'll do practice, and then I'll go home. So I'm there like every other weekend for the entire weekend, and I'll be at the gym, and I don't know how many times I've had people go, man, you had a good match last night, and I'm like, what? You know, like, kind of throws you off when you're not paying attention to it. And then, you know, just going out to eat and stuff, like, kids come up to me asking for an autograph. And it's funny because it's like the two buildings we run, Center Reach New York, and then the school's in Deer Park, and then we run the Deer Park Community Center. And it's like, you know, they're like 20 minutes apart, you know, but it's crazy how each audience is different, in Center Reach, it's more of an adult audience where the heels are more over. And then in Deer Park, it's a lot of kids and family, you know, so we get, you know, the good guys are, like, super over. Like, if you're going to do, like, a big angle and finish something off for babyface, you do it there. And if you're going to do some sort of heel attack or something and get the crowd riled up, like, ready to jump the rail type thing, you do it in Center Reach, you know, so.
Right, right. In addition to the wrestling school that you train for, is there any other projects that you have working on that you'd like to plug for us?
I'm all over the place. I mean, the, you know, as far as, like, places I work and stuff, it's, you know, NWA on Fire is, you know, is one of my favorites. CTWE in Connecticut, in Bethany, Connecticut, they, you know, we just did an iPay-per-view a couple weeks ago, went really well, and, you know, they're a really fun company to work for, you know, and Victory Pro Wrestling, like, you know, our shows couldn't, you know, they couldn't get any better. Like, they couldn't, you know, they run smooth, the crowd's hot every night, it's full to capacity. You know, it's probably one of the funnest times I've ever had in wrestling is working with Victory Pro Wrestling. So, you know, I'm just kind of like very busy, 2-3 events every weekend for me. Like this weekend I'm in Rhode Island for XWA and then Saturday and Sunday in VPW in New York. So, you know, I'm kind of just all over the place.
Yeah, definitely. And Ricky, before we let you get out of here, we cannot let you go without asking you about your YouTube fame and Rick Noon Goes to Chicago. The one thing I wanted to ask you is, how much do you remember from that night, and what the fuck was Samoa Joe drinking that got you so messed up?
I don't remember much of that, but I couldn't even answer that question. Like, I don't know what he was drinking.
That's a good answer.
We'll have those nights.
I know it was clear, and then it burned when it went down, so that's about as much as, you know, what a lot of people don't know is that was all done by one man, and he wasn't even ever mentioned in any of it or anything. Like, a lot of the heat goes to Cabana and Punk for, I guess it was their bright idea to put it up on YouTube and whore it out the way they did. But it was actually Kevin Quinn, who was kind of my mentor and who I credit to really training me in pro wrestling, at least in the States. He trained Punk and Ace Steel and Cabana and Chris Daniels, a Chicago guy, Windy City Wrestling in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And he's the one. It was, we went. He trained us in L.A. at UPW. He was brought in as a booker and head trainer for UPW in California when, like, John Cena was still there and Aaron Aguilera and Samoa Joe and Chris Daniels. All of us started, you know, making our name in UPW because at the time they were actually a developmental territory for WWE. Like, I think it was us. It was another place, I want to say, in Chicago, maybe. And it was Victor Quiñones and IWA in Puerto Rico were all technically developmental areas. And Power Pro Wrestling in Memphis, maybe, and which ended up going to OVW or whatever. But WWE would basically pay the company, or the scumbag Rick Bassman at the time, to pay trainers, you know, and then have a certain amount of shows and, you know, and have trainers and stuff down there teaching the school and stuff. So that's how Kevin got the job. And him and I really clicked well. And, you know, he was ended up becoming like a person I ask for advice to this day. You know, and this was back in like 2001 or 2002 when he started down there. And so he ended up having a falling out with Bassman and then moved back to Chicago in 2004. And he was a manager at that bar that we went to after, and that we were celebrating because it was Ring of Honor's first double shot weekend. So it was a big deal to like Punk and all them. They were like so excited. And then we were kind of celebrating that like me and Rocky had debuted in ROH. So it was like a big deal to everybody. So we get to the Kevin's bar, and I was under the impression we were just gonna go hang out, you know, grab some drinks and some food and catch our flights. But you know, I get there and Kevin's like I remember him telling the bartender, like, he's like, these guys right here, and he pointed to like me, Joe, and Rocky, and he's like, they drink for free all night on me. And then Joe was like, hell yeah, let's do this, you know. And so he started drinking, but he's, you know, like 900 pounds, so he could just keep drinking, you know. It doesn't seem to faze him, you know. And so then I was like, hey, I want a big glass like Joe too. I'm a big boy. So and I started drinking, and then Rocky starts drinking. So everyone's, you know, just being silly, and you know, punks like sipping on his Diet Coke or whatever, Pepsi, whatever. And yeah. And, you know, so it just ended up being like a sloppy, hot mess of a night. But those idiots recorded me, and then, yeah, some shenanigans happened. I guess I was, like, arguing and wanting to fight everyone that went to the Wiener Circle or something, somewhere in Chicago.
Yeah.
Like one of those places. I remember it was, like, I think that's right next to the Cubs Stadium or something like that. I don't remember getting there. I remember, like, parts of being next to it and stuff, but, yeah, that was just a rough night.
All right. Thanks a lot, Ricky. Everybody go check out victorycorewrestling.com. Ricky Reyes is on Facebook. You don't have a Twitter, do you?
Yes, I do. It's at RickyReyes01. Yeah.
Okay, so at RickyReyes01, you guys can get in touch with him there. Go check out some of his matches on YouTube. Go check out Rick Moon Goes to Chicago because it's hilarious, and we're never going to let him live that down. Ricky, thanks a lot for coming on the show. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Not a
thanks
problem.
A lot, Ricky.
Take care.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye. That was our exclusive interview with Mr. Ricky Reyes of Victory Pro Wrestling, and on behalf of Josh and myself, Ricky, we want to thank you again for taking the time to come on the show, and we're sorry we asked you about Rick Noon, but we had to. Come on, you're famous for it. Anyways, we're going to move on here to something else. Oh, hey, guys, what's going on? Disembodied voice? What? How the fuck did you get here?
Oh, you know, I don't know. Josh is gone, so I thought I'd just come here.
What? How the fuck did you get in my apartment? It's locked.
Oh, well, you know, Josh gave me a key. You know, you gave him a spare key?
Just get out of here. Will you just go in the corner or something? I'll talk to you later.
But I want to be on the show. I got all upset.
No, get out of here.
Okay, fine.
Sorry, guys. Nothing like a cheap imitation to make everybody hate a show. We're going to move on here to, we're going to open up the phone lines here. I'm going to open up the phone lines. You guys want to call in and talk to me about Raw, Extreme Rules, the Ricky Reyes interview, anything else? It is 347-838-9944. Again, 347-838-9944. And while I'm waiting for some people to get online, if they want to talk to me, something happened, a couple of big news and notes from WWE. First thing is that Roman Reigns got hurt apparently at a SmackDown taping. And that could be bad considering the Shield just won the tag team titles. We don't know how serious the injury is as of last check, which was a few minutes ago. No big news had come out that it was confirmed or it was denied or it was in the middle. But if Reigns is hurt, I mean, I don't know. Do you put the title on Ambrose and do the free rule? I mean, I'd like to see that, but could be bad news for the Shield. And then this kind of got swept under the rug, and this was something I thought was interesting, was that Sonny just got released from prison, and that's nothing new because we know the bitch is in and out of prison. But apparently she was diagnosed with cervical cancer in prison, and she had to go to a local hospital to get treatment. I guess from reports is that she is cancer-free right now. But, you know, not that I wish cancer on anybody, but if anybody has cancer coming to them, I don't want to say it's her, but karma's kind of a bitch. But apparently Sunny has cervical cancer, and she is clear, so she's in good health, and it's okay. Of her now that she's okay, but yeah, scary times. We do have a call. Let's bring this caller in. Hello, Dark Main Event.
Hey, it's Adam Cole, guys. How y'all doing?
Ah, the Irish Warrior. Welcome back to the Dark Main Event. How you doing, Adam?
Been a little better, but hey, that's life, right?
Pretty much. What can we do?
I was listening into your segment earlier talking about the Joe Henning Triple H segment. Kind of a little joke that I had heard going around, but everyone was talking about how the concussion segment with the Triple H. I honestly don't think it's a they're doing a concussion storyline. My personal thoughts on it, and it's the jokes that myself and Beer Man have been having, it's a WWE drinking game. Every time Michael Cole mentions the WWE app, you take a shot, and apparently Triple H can't handle his alcohol.
Man, if that was the drinking game, then I would be drunk by the first 10 minutes of the show.
I know. I mean, I've been trying to get Beer Man to play some of these drinking games, that one in particular. And as you know, that's his superpower, is his alcohol tolerance. So we'll see how that turns out. But I figured I'd chime in with my 2 cents worth on that. And I spoke with Bethany, and I've got a couple matches that I've been looking through my stuff to send to her. I'll let you know about it as well.
Okay.
Get her different points of view, more than just old WWE or old NWA, just a lot of indie stuff, you know, some more interesting different takes on stuff for her.
Interesting. All right. Yeah, we can definitely talk about that off the air and a bit later on. But, yeah, that drinking game, that sounds dangerous. I might get alcohol poisoning from that.
All right. Well, I'll get off of here. But I figured I'd chime in and give you that little tidbit and get a nice little laugh out of you for the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for calling in. Feel free to check in any time.
All right. No problem. Looking forward to hearing the rest of the show.
All right. Take care, Adam. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
Nice surprise from the Irish Warrior, Adam Cole. Go check out his Kickstarter. He is still running it, The Adventures of Beer Man. We will post it again on our Facebook page. He also has a podcast, which is pretty cool. It's called Pour Me Another Podcast. It's also on Blog Talk Radio. You guys can go find him and tune in. I'm going to leave the phone lines open for a couple more minutes, 347-838-9944. One more thing I wanted to talk about since I ranted about Sonny was a little bit of TNA news from last week. For those of you who didn't read the spoilers ahead of time, which is something that I frequently do now because TNA has gotten unbearable for me to watch, is that there was a stipulation added to the Sting versus Bully Ray, we don't want to see this shit match, for the TNA World Championship at Slammiversary, which is if Sting loses, he can never challenge for the TNA Championship again. Ever, ever. And this makes me rethink my original prediction that Bully Ray is going to win the match and go feud with Hogan, because they are on Sting's dick too much to never have him challenge for the world title again unless he's going to retire, which I don't think he has plans to do anytime soon. So I'm going to sadly change my prediction for that match and say that Sting comes out of Slammiversary, as much as I hate to say it, the TNA World Champion, and hopefully they kill the Aces and Eights storyline, because that's just so overplayed, and it's the NWO, and D-Lo got promoted to Prospect, and I don't know what's going on with that, but if Sting walks out world champion, and you guys know I'm a Sting fan, anybody who listens to this show knows that I love Sting, and I've been a big fan of his for years and years and years. If Sting wins the world title, TNA loses any little shred of credibility they had left with me in the first place. The man should not be the promotion's world champion, even if they're doing Sting versus Hogan for the world title. That's even worse than Bully versus Hogan, because at least Bully can still go, and he should be a world champion. Sting has no business touching the TNA World Championship. And with that stipulation, and you knowing TNA like you know TNA, unfortunately Sting is going to walk out TNA World Champion. Before we go here, phone lines are still open if you guys want to call in last minute before we go. Got to get our plugs in. Again, this podcast is brought to you by HighSpots.com. No, it isn't. It's brought to you by KayfabeCorner.com. You guys can go check it out. We just put up a special behind the curtain for our buddy Josh, who, again, is not on the show this week. Jeremy Staples and myself wrote it. We hope you guys enjoy it. It's got a lot of Josh's characters and a lot of his kind of style of humor. We just had a Kane event. You guys heard that promoted on the show last week. That was a big event for us. We all did Kane pieces. There's a pictorial retrospective. You guys can go check that out. This show is on iTunes as well. Look up the Dark Main Event on iTunes. Subscribe, rate, leave us a review, and tell us how awesome we are and how much you hate my really crappy imitation of disembodied voice. And go visit us on Facebook, facebook.com/kayfabecorner or facebook.com/thedarkmainevent. You guys can go visit us there, leave suggestions for Girl Meets Wrestling like Adam is going to do. You can also hear all our past shows on kayfabecorner.com. We put all our past shows on there. I think we're behind one, but we'll get caught up after this week. We don't have any more calls, so we are going to end it for tonight. Thank you guys very much for tuning in. We will be back on our regularly scheduled Tuesday time slot next week. That is the same time, 11:30 p.m. Eastern, 8:30 p.m. Pacific, 6:30 p.m. Hawaiian, right here on Blog Talk Radio. For the Dark Main Event and Josh, who I'm sure misses you guys, my name is Steve DeMaine. Have a great night.